that's what we're starting the episode with. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm your host again. It's me, Andrew Leff's ugly cousin, Jay Hersko. Joining me once again, I have a panel for a loosely scripted episode. I have Mr. Chris Merman, the man,
not
the verb.
What makes you think that Leff has good-looking cousins?
Oh my gosh.
I'm just a safe assumption here. I don't know. Safe assumption. I also have, because I'm picking on him, he's going to be here, Andrew Leff.
The equally adorable Andrew Leff, because Jay, you are adorable, and I love looking at you on these calls. So
I'm like, good to be here. I'm like Kevin Smith, but the pre-Kevin Smith, back when he was fat.
You actively chose to look better this year, Jay. Like, you made a decision, I will look normal this year, and I applaud you for it.
And my wife would thank you because she hates the beard too. And last but not least, Janae McConnell. Janae, thanks for joining us again.
You're welcome.
So the topic of this episode is, it's loosely scripted, so therapy. We're going to get a little crazy with it. The topic is, what did I do wrong? I'm running an Agile transformation. Help, I'm running an Agile transformation. What do I do now? So to give a little bit of background before we dive in, the four of us now are currently in roles where we are tasked with, quote unquote, delivering Agile into an organization, be it a transformation, a process, a way of working. My first question, my first honest and most endearing question, I'm going to start with you, Chris Merman. What the fuck were we thinking?
It sounded great at the time. I mean, who doesn't like new letters by their title, you know? And like, I legit thought, like, hey, I've been telling leaders what to do for years as a consultant. Like, let's see if my stuff's any good. Some of that was what we did the Merman After Dark episode on, was basically like, I thought all these things were true. And then I started figuring that. So like, this isn't like a complete waste. It's not a complete waste of my time. I've learned a lot of really bad decisions that an organization can make, and me, right? I thought that was a great decision, and then I tried doing it, and it's just different. Like, it's totally different.
Right.
It's opened my eyes.
And before I go to Janae and then Leff, the point of this conversation is twofold, right? We want to share some of our experiences to understand that transformations are stochastic. They're all different, but they're all the same. And also, for people who are maybe thinking about getting into this role, taking on this mantle, carrying the Agile torch, let's give them an honest, unvarnished opinion of what we actually go through. And for Merman, I'm going to go to you, Janae. What were we thinking?
I am very passionate about this. I'm excited by it. The opportunity for, this is my first go at doing this anywhere aside from just supporting a group of agilists that's working really hard at it already, and I find it very inspiring. It pushes me to be better myself. Like, I never stop thinking about it. I was going to tell you, Jay, I woke up this morning before I even opened up my eyes, I was like, what about Wischief? And then I was like, what would Jay say?
What would Jay say?
I'm not kidding you. I almost texted you.
You should have. You should have, because at that point, I'd already been up for 3 hours, fully caffeinated.
I know. Yeah. But to me, it's exciting still. And I think it's cool. And yeah, I love it.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Mr. Leff, what were we thinking? What were you thinking?
Yeah. So I kind of like to think of it this way. It's kind of like skydiving. I'm super excited, right? My first time, I'm getting ready. I got those butterflies. I'm in this, you know, kind of essence-y kind of feeling. I get into the plane, the nerves start hitting, and I'm like, we get up to altitude, and the doors open, and I'm like, I don't want to do this, right? Like, no. This is our. And then the instructor whispers in your ear and says, "Your ex-wife packed your parachute." And pushes you out the door, right? So
no, whispers it like very, very like, hey.
Yeah, right? So I think that I love what Janae just said, right? It takes me back to before we all got weathered. And I'm envious of rocks that sit and just get weathered for years as they get smoother. And as humans, as we weather, we get more wrinkled and shriveled up, right? So I love that spirit of coming in with kind of those shiny, bright, kind of happier thoughts. But I do think that the organizational pressures that occur through transformation steal the shine of kind of how you want to keep going to that well. So I one more antidote or
anecdote.
I'm not going to say that. Thank you. These Invisaligns just mess with my poor English already.
He's had a day, but, folks, okay? He's yes. had a day.
And I just lost my train of thought. So I we will move on.
All right, so while you're thinking of that anecdote, I'm going to go to you, Janae, and ask, what's one of the battles you're currently fighting as you try to shepherd an organization through a transformation that you didn't think you'd be fighting?
So there's a Winnie the Pooh quote that I like that I use that came to me from one of my mentors who I love and adore, who I think is amazing at all of this. And it's something along the lines of like Winnie the Pooh is being dragged down the stairs behind Christopher Robin. And he hits his head on every stair as he goes down. I don't know if any of the three of you are familiar with this, but he says, so it's the quote is, here comes Edward Bear now down the stairs behind Christopher Robin, bump, bump, bump on the back of his head. It is, as far as he knows, the only way of coming down the stairs. He is sure that there must be a better way, if only he could stop to think about it. And that is, I would say that, you know, I kind of walked into this thinking everyone's going to be psyched about this and they're excited and they're welcoming it because that's what I understood to be the situation. Like they're ready for it. And they're not quite ready for it, and that's okay. A lot of the things that I've run up against is me being like, what about this? We're going to try this. We're going to work on, you know, these two or three things. And everyone's just like, nah, I think we're good. And I'm like, but
really?
I mean, let's talk about it, right? Like, are you bumping down the stairs or is there a better way to get down there? Like, and can I help you? And will you listen to me? Help you understand that there's a better way to do this. So, yeah.
Okay. Merman, what are you fighting uphill that you didn't think you were going to be fighting this battle?
I don't know that there's anything that I didn't think I was going to be fighting. Well, I let me say this. When you interview for these type of roles, I've talked to all three of you. We all at some point in time during the pre-interview, interview process, whatever, we made a connection with either the person we're reporting to, our coworkers, both people that are reporting to us, whatever, we ain't made a connection with people and they're like, man, it'd be fun to try this with them. And so you'd think, surely I won't fight them and battle them. Like I have other fights to have and there's other people to, you know, that won't be feeling, what we're doing, but you don't think, all right, I'm not going to have to worry about fighting with them kind of a thing. But the part that we sometimes forget is like, just because you're like a C-suite person and, a president, whatever the title is of the people that are quote unquote in charge, right? I mean, we're supposed to be in charge of stuff. Although I've learned, I'm actually in charge of very little. I'm a vice president. I'm in charge of very little. But I will say this, like the plans are basically always in flux, right? Like you may think my boss has a plan, an agenda. We're going to head this direction. We're going to use this framework. We're going to try this methodology. These are our North Stars, so to speak. but they're always in flux and it's always in changing and it's always changing. And like, after you've been there 3 months, basically all the plans that you discussed through the interview process and had planned to do, they basically go out the door, and you make it up every, and it's like you start over from scratch with a new plan every 3 to 9 months kind of a thing. I mean, most organizations do that. Like, and I shouldn't be surprised that it was, that it is that way, but that's the way organizations work. Like, they're no different from us, which is we make it up as we go as well. I mean, we have things that we want to try, but you know, we're all making it up as we go, and it doesn't change when you're in a leadership position.
Left.
That's a good question.
Let me rephrase it. What's the battle you're fighting that you're most surprised by? Because typically we're all fighting multiple battles, like trying to make this, the agile thing go. What's the one where you're like, man, I did not expect to be pushing up this rock uphill?
Jeez. I feel like that's more than one rock. But when I hear this question, what pops into my head is logic able to thrive in corporate America?
No.
Right. Well, why? So
hold on. That's not necessarily true. Collective logic may fail, but an individual, well, like one person's logic doesn't line up with another person's logic. That absolutely makes sense. And we should never, like, corporations are not a collective group of people. They're a bunch of individuals. And let's look at IT. Like, we can like open up the entire kimono. Like, the way that IT industry is today, I mean, we're just mercs. We're just mercenaries, you know, like, you know, trying new things, checking out new things. You know, we can job hop as much as we want. No shame. Like, there's no collective logic left. You know what I mean? Like, for that to be the case, people need to like make a commitment and stick it out and like really be committed to finding alignment and all that kind of stuff. And that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen.
So I don't disagree with what you're saying, but I think I was coming at it from a little different angle.
Okay.
I think logic, when we as people are working with other people, logically is this how you would want, let's just say you're in toxic environments, would you want your children to be treated that way? Would you want anybody to speak to your wife or your daughter or your spouse or your husband in the way that you're addressing certain things to get a sense of urgency started? The logical part of those conversations, I feel, are missing, right? So there's a ton of psychological safety that isn't there. And also, to take a step further, is I would say that transformation isn't a new activity. We come in and often kind of come in with that, hey, we're going to go through transformation. And I always find, I was having this debate with a couple colleagues this week, ironically enough. Well, it takes about 18 months. And I'm like, what takes 18 months? Transformation. What about how do you timeline this up? To me, right, going in, we're always in a state of transformation, right? We're always emerging into something. How are we looking at the data that is pumped into our brains day in and day out at work and using that to make logical decisions that implement changes that align to something, right? As opposed to being better agilists. Who cares? I don't care, right? It doesn't matter. I don't need you to be the best agilist in the world. Can you accommodate change? Can you pivot? Can you let things go? Can you make a point without making an enemy, right? Can you actually have a conversation or facilitate through friction without shutting the entire workforce down in a way that's like, screw this place, I hate it, I don't ever want to work here again, and that's the only thing I'm going to say, which prohibits people to lean in to the rigor it takes when we talk about transformative behavior and action.
Yeah.
You made the point you made about crap. You said a lot of good things. You said one thing specifically. I was like, ooh, we need to come back to that point. Damn it. I'll remember it.
Well, I will. The point that you made, Lef, about like synthesizing all the data and information and opinions that come your way on a daily basis, and then being able to kind of like figure that out work it into kind of what you already thought to be true or what you already maybe were planning on doing, and then being like, oh, okay, well, now I'm going to do something different, or maybe now I feel different or I think differently about these things. That's what I'm wrestling with, is just the like, oh yes, that is, it's like just, it's another layer, just the constant input.
Do you feel like, so you just plus one left on the data side, and I like that. One thing I kind of want to poke at, maybe we can do it in just a minute after Jay gets a shot, is like, what, you can look at data 20 different ways. And often I think the data that we use in organizations now is merely just to confirm whatever bias you already have, whatever preconceived idea you already had. So if I believe that story points are stupid, I can use your data point to show that story points are stupid. We shouldn't be using it. But if people are used to story pointing, it doesn't matter whether you think it's logical to them. They're like, well, but it's because of this and this and this and this and this. And all of a sudden you're stuck with using story points for another PI. And you're like, well, crap. Like I still struggle with this idea of like logic, because I don't know how to ask people to be logical, because it doesn't mean they're going to agree with me.
Well, it's a stupid argument to try and make. And I don't mean stupid in the sense that it's unintelligent. It's stupid in the sense it's pointless, because human beings are not logical. We are not rational. We are emotional, and we make our decisions based upon pattern recognition. The thing that I'm most surprised that I kind of have a little bit of an uphill battle with is the metrics piece. And most companies, when they engage, you know, this is my seventh transformation, I think, give or take. Most companies, the first thing they want to do is they want to bring in a tool, and then they want to use metrics, and they want to, what are we doing with metrics, metrics, metrics? And I'm kind of in this weird sort of liminal state where everybody knows it's important, but nobody has the time in to actually define them. And I find that very fascinating, because from the people who are the left brain project management types, they want those metrics. So you would think that's the first thing they do, right? The first thing you don't do is the maturity assessment. It's, well, give me metrics for burn down and story points. And that's one of those weird things where I'm like, I didn't really think I'd be fighting this. I didn't really think this wouldn't be here, and I'd got to kind of push upwards. And I realized, you know, people that came before me, everybody's got busy. But one of those things, I was surprised that a company wouldn't be so metric focused. And maybe it's due to my blinders of every other place I've worked. That's the first thing they do, is they pull out the burn down chart and they beat you with it. The burn down chart becomes the beat down chart.
Yeah, it's agile theater. I mean, that's what a lot of this creates, is just agile theater, right? So
it's a shame. Let's pivot it left. You were talking last, so I'm going to start with you. Let's pivot it to a more positive question. What's a battle you went in armed for bear with that it was a non-issue, that you're like, really? Like, I brought the sword. I brought the shield. Really? I don't have to fight this?
Meaning you're expecting a fight, but you didn't get one?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. You were expecting to go in and have to like drop a hammer. And then the person or the people just went, or the culture, the company culture went, yeah, okay, that works for us.
Wow. I don't think I've ever been asked that question. I have to say, most recently, it's been culture. I'm so used to going in as a consultant to a very toxic culture and having to swim upstream from a culture perspective. I haven't experienced that. And I was prepared to, and it's been a nice change. So I have to say, from a culture perspective, kind of going from an external entity to a full-time entity internally, not having that level of you know, complexity has, I don't know if it's helped or hurt or anything other than it's allowed me to focus differently. I think that's a better way to put it. So okay. Not having as toxic of cultures that I've worked with in the past has been interesting for me to not have that.
Can you give an example of an aspect of the culture that in other orgs was completely terrible that's better here? Like I'm curious what specifically about the culture surprised
you. So the willingness to listen and the willingness to actually agree and not just stand on ceremony. One client I was at, literally the culture was at least twice to three times a month, someone left in an ambulance. That's how much pressure that place applied. When I tell you that is not an exaggeration, I didn't believe it until I was working there for almost a year and saw it on a daily basis. So trying to bat like that is, I hope to never be in that situation ever in my life, nor do I wish that upon anybody. That to me is stress that is insane, right? But using that, right, to say, to have people bring me into conversations now voluntarily, reaching out to me, wanting to listen and partner and pair, identify issues, and using, you know, a deep, vast knowledge base to get creative, I appreciate that where I'm at. I really do. So whether it can go into actual, it can become a thing of the future or a way that we work, that remains to be seen. But I'll take those short, you know, those quick wins. I'll take those opportunities and bright spots, because you all alluded to it. The hardest thing about the work we do is not the work. It's the people, right? The people we're all at different stages of our journeys. And it's hard, right? When everyone's aligned to something different, and going back to values, right? What do we value as an organization, and what do we value within each other, and how do we work together collectively?
Janae, same question.
I'm just really happy for Lef. No, but actually my answer is the same. Yes. And so I would say I'm not having to fight the culture battle. I'm not having to fight the leadership battle. I am lucky enough to have agile experience within the leadership team, all the way up to the C-suite, that is very supportive. And the company culture is very supportive of this, right? Like, very people focused, very supportive of like learning, continuous improvement, you know, taking risks, learning from those, celebrating failure as much as we celebrate learning, all that sort of thing, or success and all that sort of thing. But back to something that you said, Jay, is that I have been pleasantly surprised that I haven't really had to fight the metrics fight, because they're like, we're not gonna worry about that. Let's focus on the basics and the foundational, you know, fundamental stuff that's important. And I'm like, great.
It's a trap.
Well, I didn't say that. But I'm not saying that I don't see it coming. I see it coming. But I think that, man. Give me
one moment. Oh, just totally derailed their train of thought. Merman. No. What's the fight you're not fighting that I thought you were going
to fight? I'm sorry. I did not mean to do that, but you all were thinking it. You were all thinking it.
Of course I was. I'm like, oh, that's sweet. She's about to get kicked in the face.
That's fine. I'm ready. I'm ready for it now.
I guess there's other places they could kick you, so at least you'll see it coming.
Merman?
I joke with all of my peers a lot, and especially the people that report to me, that Agile is the one thing that everybody knows enough about to disagree with you. So like, I don't have product people go, hey, why did you put the return there? Why don't you bracket your code properly? Like, you never hear that happen. You don't hear developers go to, you know, they'll just say things like, oh, the backlog needs help, but they're not going to ever go like, no, if you'd word the acceptance criteria this way, like, they don't do that. Like, it's like, you don't, or like, what, how are you doing your customer interviews? Like, developers don't care. They just want to write code and do their job, kind of a thing. But Agile is a thing because you've been to a conference or you've heard you've read the blog post by this idiot named Chris Merman, and you're like, I know what Agile is. And And so you, so someone's like, actually, I read a blog post that disagrees with that. I'm not sure that we should be getting rid of story points, kind of a thing. I didn't fucking ask you for the record, but that's cool that you gave me your opinion unwarranted. That's why we're all laughing, because it's like eventually they're just going to start telling you what is and isn't agile. I had a development manager tell me that something I wanted to do wasn't very agile, and I said, who told you you got to say something wasn't agile? I have a couple people on LinkedIn I'd like to introduce you to. You'll be friends with them. Love you, Mike Hall. The one fight that I was expecting to have that I haven't had to was when I just decided that some part of the framework that we're using wasn't applicable, and so we just got rid of it. I was expecting like, well, we were trained this way. I didn't do their training. I didn't design the arts. I showed up when they were already going, kind of a thing. But I was like, oh, well, we were trained by that we need to do this and this and this, and the framework says to do this. And every, like, a couple people on my team started a sentence with, well, SAFe says, and I said, if you ever start a sentence with that again, you're fired. And of course they knew I was joking, but I was trying to like drill into them, like, stop saying an inanimate object is talking to you. But I was totally expecting pushback. I was expecting to be like, no, we're supposed to do it this way. It says that, like, according to Scrum, we're according to Kanban, we're supposed to be doing this. Like, yeah, but does it make sense for us? As soon as I say, does this make sense for us? And they go, no. Cool, then don't do it. And everybody's like, awesome, one less meeting. That's great. Like, so that's been pleasant.
For me, it's kind of echoing what all of you said. There's an open-minded willingness. It's weird when someone comes to you and says, hey, I think I'm doing this right, but I'm not sure. Can I get some help? Can you just help me out with this? And well, I mean, it's reassuring that maybe I'm not as crazy as everybody else thinks I am, but also it's a kind of positive. You're always expecting me to have to fight with people and to fight semantic diffusion. And here's what agile really is. And it's interesting when people come forward and like, hey, you know, I read all this and I think I got it, but here's where I really can use 15 minutes of your time. And I was like, wow, this is kind of great that someone's actually coming forward with a well-formed question and says, hey, the guide says this, the website says this, but we're doing this. Does this make sense? Or should we think about it a different way? And those kind of questions make all the other BS go away. Cause it's like, ah, here's someone who's really trying to work it out for themselves. That's great.
Yeah. I had a dev manager come to me at the beginning of this week and asked, hey, I'd like some analysis to be done on like a feature before we get started. How do I enforce that? And I go, well, have you heard of the definition of ready? And he goes, yeah, someone mentioned it once before. And I go, well, you can say this work is not ready to begin until you get a C4 diagram. And he's like, I can say that? He's like, how do I tell product that? And so I kind of gave him the words. And then his boss messaged me like 2 days later. And he's like, I got to referee a fight because one of my managers was using Merman's words about why he got to say that work wasn't ready to begin. And he's like, and I want to hug you for it.
So next question I'm going to ask you, Janae, as it comes down to running these type of things, being the person in charge to help run quote unquote a transformation, performance transformation, what's been the most surprising aspect?
Oh man. I'm trying to figure out how this is different than the first question.
We'll say the question again. Like, that'll give us all
a chance. What surprised you? So in the role of HMFIC in charge of a transformation, what's the part that surprised you? What aspect of the role has surprised you?
Well, I guess some of this is general, some of this is specific, but specifically, I've been surprised at the amount of, again, it's going to sound so green. I have been surprised at the amount of resistance to change based on what I understood I was walking into.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't make you green though. Like we all think, oh, this is the time that they're not going to like come at me as pitchforks about something. Like,
that's really.
I can get married for the fourth time. This time it'll be different.
Okay. You can shut up, Jay. You're not even married once.
So I would say that, and you know, organizational inertia, despite the fact that they're moving so fast, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
But I've also been pleasantly surprised by kind of something similar to what you just mentioned, is the amount of people that have been like, hey, curious about this, wondering if you could help me with this. I'd like to try this. Could this help? Could Agile help? And I'm like, yeah, it can. Let me just hold on. Yes. How can I help? You know what I mean? Instead of being like, oh, that's, oh, color me surprised. But I think it's been that, all of those things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Merm.
Gosh. I was thinking really hard, and then I was like, Janae's answer was very uplifting. And what are you talking about? I hadn't even gotten the slam out and you were already like flipping me off. I was literally giving you a
call. She's listened to an episode, she knows. So yeah. What's the most surprising?
I am surprised that and for the record, I am continually surprised by this, that because I always wanted to be, a VP, like a VP of transformation sounded like a job title that I really wanted to have on my resume. It was all this good experience. And I don't think that it matters that I'm like, some days you could barely tell that I'm even in charge of people. Like, I'm continually surprised that doesn't matter what your title is, you're still the agile nerd. You're still the process nerd. And you're always going to be at the kid table. And every single one of you listening knows exactly what I'm talking about. You may be treated with respect, but when it comes to the agile stuff, they go, oh, you just go do that. You just go worry about your agile stuff. Like, we're over here.
Oh, discussing, you're so cute with boy. Your agile. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, we're doing big boy things. Like, you go, we're talking about moving our, you know, server farm into the cloud. Like, that's important. Like, you go do your process things. Like, you know, we will always be at the kiddie table when it comes to leadership. Doesn't matter what our title is. And for the record, an agilist becomes a CTO. Some of the agile things they used to tell clients before all of a sudden get replaced with, I just have to do stuff. And so I'm making this like, it doesn't matter. Like, it just doesn't, like, I need to stop trying to go for like falling for the allure of a title. Like, ooh, you'll be the lead consultant on this engagement. You can lead this engagement. Oh, I'm in charge. No, I'm not. No, I'm still at the kiddie table. So that's great.
You bring up a CTO, and that brings up the interesting point about when you reach a certain point in the corporate hierarchy, and this, some of our listeners may be surprised by this. When you reach a certain point, it comes down to promises. And what promises have you made to someone else? And CEOs make promises to shareholders. CIOs make promises to their business partners. CTO makes promises to the CIO. Everybody's making promises. And above a certain level, that's your primary motivator. Is, am I going to have to eat crow because I didn't deliver on that promise? Now, those of us that are in the trenches, we're not motivated by the, I mean, realistically, we didn't make any promises to any C-level executives, any VPs anywhere. We're most concerned about, is this job killing me? Do I have work-life balance? Am I stressed out? Am I taking 6 Tylenol PMs on a Sunday because I don't want to go to work the next day? That may or may not be a true confession. God help my liver. Promises. And I think that's a big difference. And when we get to this point where we're kind of expected to deliver the agile, to quote Johanna Rothman, there's a promise inherent there that a lot of us didn't even sign up for. And we took the job, but didn't realize that someone promised something of a magnitude we were not ready to go for.
Yeah. And they didn't ask us how we feel about it either.
Right. Right. He's been awfully quiet, which makes me nervous. Mr. Left.
He's just playing with himself.
What's the thing that surprised you?
I think it's a combination or culmination of everything everyone's talking about is, you know, and I don't think your comment was green at all, Janae. I think that is a very accurate thing to state is the change happens all the time. Why are we resisting it? What is resist? Why are we not leaning in, right? All these coachy words we can use. But you also talk about, you know, kind of this deliver the agile and the unwritten things, or the things that the expectations that are not really discussed but implied. I love this one as far as surprises, right? Speed to market. We're going to increase our speed to market. Okay, well, how fast are you moving today? Well, we don't measure that. Okay, so you want to move faster? Yes. Well, but we don't know how fast we're moving today. Great. I want to be able to change the tires on my car when I'm going 100 miles an hour, but I'll probably die. In fact, I'm 100% positive I will kill myself. Well, I want you to try it anyway. Well, maybe if you slow down to 50 miles an hour, it's still a bad idea, right? So this kind of fiction that comes with transformation as far as speed to market, or, you know, we're going to be able to release more frequently. No. Are you going to disrupt your current way of working to achieve goals that align to speed to market or higher quality or, you know, automation, whatever it might be, right? So are we connecting those dots? Are we looking at our current systems to say that there's no freaking way our code is so fragile? We're still using freaking punch cards. We can't automate, right? We need someone to physically put a card in a system and punch it. Like it just, to me, that's the surprise every time. It's the gotcha. I want these things so badly and I'm so tightly connected and I am emotional about them. And does that sway my decision-making going in thinking others should feel as passionate as I do when their goals are different, right? Financial institutions do not think about transformation the same way, right? Bottom line, what's the dollar? What's our shareholder price? What stop, you know, how do we keep our shareholders happy? And what's the street going to do, right? We need to support that. That does not necessarily lend itself to the agile experience that we go in to try and create.
Well, right, the dollars.
You talked about dollars, like all those. Sorry, go ahead, Jay.
I was going to say the dollars and cents aspect of it, where for these amount of dollars, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Well, I was going to comment. He talked about like, speed to market, or insert any other buzz phrase here, right? Like the problem is that they have a deck that they paid $150,000 for from a big four consulting that said that to improve their stock price, that they need to, in this industry, they need to improve their time to market. And by doing that, we automate and we go agile. And nobody knows what that means. They bought, like my company bought GitLab licenses at the beginning of the year, and they're like, hey, we need to migrate all our code to all our repos to this platform where we're going to start automating. We're going to start doing trunk-based development. Like they told me that when I was interviewing for the job, kind of a thing. There are teams that still have not even migrated a single one or zero into GitLab yet. And you want to know why? Because stuff keeps popping up and stuff keeps getting thrown up in front of it. And at the end of the year, they're wanting to turn off our other build tools and they're going to go, wait, we can't, we've not even moved any code yet. So like there's also everybody's got good ideas. They've got the PowerPoint decks to prove it. You know what I mean? Like they just do this and you'll be better. But
I think it also comes down to, are we companies that are innovators or are we order takers, right? Are we looking to change the industry? Or are we just looking to continue to ride the wave that has kept us afloat for 10 years, right? Yeah, and I hate to use Apple as the example, but I'm part of the Apple ecosystem, right? I pay Apple for a developer account. I pay them to beta test their software. I get a release every week that I test and I pay for that privilege. Like, what are you thinking? Like, seriously, what? That's a great, you know, their iPhone development, just in general, right? Like, they took the notch and they said, hey, everyone hates the notch. We're going to make it bigger and dynamic now, right? And now everyone's like, the greatest idea ever, right? We're not going to upgrade to our USB ports. We're going to still use crappy lightning cables that are slow. We don't care, right? Like they're last to adopt common sense things, yet they're innovating things and driving the market differently. Do organizations look at that as an opportunity? I don't think, you know, at least in a lot of the enterprise large, whether it's fintech, finance, or more of the regulated industries, how are we being innovative to not be held hostage to old ways of working? And is there opportunity to look at that differently? Where's that leadership component come in? Where's that conversation start? Why are we not having that? It's the same, sorry, I'm totally going off on a tangent, but to me, it's like the static ability around social security numbers, credit cards. Like, why do we have the same? I've had the same bank account number for 25 years. It hasn't freaking changed, right? Like, why? Why are these things still so embedded? Because our systems are generally not able to flex or change. It takes too much to deconstruct them, to greenfield and move innovation forward. It's just insane to me that we're so stuck. That's what makes this work hard.
But see, here's the thing, that hope that Janae spoke of, that we all have whenever we try, like we have a new client, we have a new job, we have a new whatever. We go in hopeful. There have been just enough positive stories of transformation that, and Joe Justice manages to tell them all. Like, I don't know where Joe goes, but like good things just happen wherever Joe goes, because it's an awesome case study every time he leaves there. I'm just saying, like, there are enough positive stories that every single time we try it with a new spot, we go in going, this is going to be the one. This is going to be the one where it makes something. And unfortunately, we keep getting kicked in the teeth because most companies aren't going. I mean, you said, are we innovators or are we order takers? Left, we are an order taking society. Like, IT has become about order taking. IT delivery, let me say that. IT delivery. And I consider what we do is we are part of delivery because we're trying to help transform into better ways of working. Right, as the manifesto says, we are order takers.
So
product gets their ideas from sales. Sorry, I'll shut up.
Two things regarding the doc. During the COVID lockdown, I got bigger and more dynamic and no one got excited. So we're gonna put a pin in that one. The second thing is physically, I got like the COVID 60. It's terrible. The thing that surprised me, and I'm going to be completely honest, and I don't know why it does surprise me, but it does. There are a lot of really talented people out there. A lot of really talented scrum masters and coaches and trainers and people who just get it. And it's a kind of small world. We all do kind of know each other. Like, there probably should be like a 6 degrees of Chris Merman board game we could do at the next Agile Nerd Con. But I'm always surprised, like, man, there's some really, I'm surprised with such a small world. There are people I haven't come across that I now come across that I'm like, wow, they are really, really impressively talented. One of the things you said though, Left, made me think, and I'm going to turn the mirror back around, is maybe some of our putting the grunt in disgruntled, right? Is some of our unhappiness, do we, as the people who are quote unquote tasked with delivering agile or a transformation, do we suffer from our own unrealistic expectations?
I will speak for myself. Yes. I set the bar maybe too high. And as I was ranting, that's what popped into my head. So get out of my head. I was thinking, are we setting ourselves up to at least for that failure event in our mind? And why is that such a hard lesson for us to learn from a coaching perspective, or at least for me, to set those expectations a little bit differently for myself, to say, you know, I have been part of a lot of transformations, and I would say that I have left an impact on each one, whether it's one person or 100 people, there's been an impact. Whether that transformation was successful or not, that's not how I'm measuring it anymore, right? What impact have I left? And are people in a different place than when I started? So I think, yes, it's a great call out, Jay. I think in that sense, I do think we all have to give ourselves a bit of grace, as also to understand that the bar has to be obtainable, but also we want to stretch. I mean, as a coaching kind of mindset, we strive to gain so much knowledge. And I feel like we're so thirsty all the time. that our expectation for that thirst kind of grows outside of our sphere of control. Sometimes it just grows too quick.
Yeah, I think you're right. Any other thoughts, Janae, Merman? Are we unrealistic? Do we set too high of a bar for ourselves? Are we too tough? Are we too tough of self-critics?
I don't know. I think, I will say for myself personally, I'm too tough of a self-critic. I think everybody here knows that. But in regards to like my influence as a part of a transformation or working with these teams, I think I've tried to be incredibly pragmatic. I that's very important to me. But I also kind of tie it back to like parenting and other experiences I've had in my life where I'm like, you can want all these grand, great things and you can think that we're going to get there. But it's also really important to like honor the fact that like, even if we get somewhere, that's something that means something to someone. And being able to make those one, like even just that one connection, I really appreciate Lef saying, I no longer like kind of grade myself on, was this transformation successful? Like, it's fine, whatever. But I also have the benefit of knowing that going in. I didn't like walk into it being like, if this isn't successful, I'm going to be really disappointed in myself. I mean, I will be disappointed on some level, right? And I feel like I've already kind of put that out in the knocking on wood. But I also know that in my life, personally and professionally, that the things that have made the most impact are the smaller things and the singular connections and the people that have influenced me to feel and think differently about these things makes it that much more important to me. So, sorry.
Maybe it's not that we're too hard on ourselves or we think, or we're not as successful as we should be. Maybe we just like, maybe it's more of like a, we need to take like an agile approach to like our success because we right. break things into smaller chunks and mm-hmm. we deliver it like sooner, you know, smaller, sooner. I always say that, right? Like, why don't we look at what we're doing? Like, if I don't get, we think like, oh, this is, I'm not getting my way. Like this organization is not going in the right direction because I've wanted to do this, and they won't let me, like, oh, woe is me, right? Like, there's a lot of times where conversation is like, oh, woe is us, this organization. Like we all hear it and it's almost daily. And it usually happens after a meeting ends, someone like calls you or message you like, oh, we're so fucked or whatever. Like, but if we just go, listen, all that happened is that I suggested that we stop doing story points and I did away with it and they brought it back. Okay. Like, whatever, right? So if we see like if we iterate our like our measures of success instead of making it this, right? Like I don't have to make, like there's no making anybody agile. If anybody loves Agile Uprising, you come here to listen to us talk about how most of the quote unquote agile crap that you read and hear spoken about is like bull crap. It's just terrible. And so what I'm trying to say is like, stop thinking that your job is to make your company agile. It's not going to happen. There are going to be individual people will get it more than another. I had a scrum master that it took me 6 months of drilling it into him that he didn't have to be type A to be a successful scrum master and to stop trying to be Mr. Like, you know, get all huffy and puffy like your teammates. I said, you're more laid back. Be laid back. Don't let someone pressure you into be someone you're not. Like, great, that's a win. Like, that's something I can ship. But like, does that make us, our company, more agile? No, but I made someone realize they're not a piece of shit in their role. You know what I mean? Like, it's whatever.
So I'm glad you mentioned the whole, this is bullshit, because I am one half of a transformation power twins, and my peer, who makes me look terrible, she is so amazingly talented. She made a remark the other day where she said, you know, all these stories and all these books and all these articles about all these agile transformations, which, you know, unicorns are shitting rainbows and all that sort of stuff. Where do these people work? Because it's all kind of bullshit. And those weren't her exact words, but that made me think, when I write a book, I'm not going to give you the bad part about it because I need to sell the book. So I'm going to put some Baz Luhrmann glasses on, and I'm going to turn Great Gatsby into this giant, insane Leonardo DiCaprio production.
Don't you dare make fun of that movie.
Yo, that movie is fucking great. And you know what other movie is great? And I will fight anyone to the death who disagrees. Elvis. Carrying on.
I loved Elvis.
Oh,
I
it was fantastic. Elvis. Cried at the end. We've totally gone off a rocket here. Left is like, my God, I never should have skipped the edibles. But my point being is, if I'm trying to sell a book, I'm going to paint a rosy picture. If I want an article to get engagement on LinkedIn, I'm going to paint a rosy picture. And I guess advice to anyone listening is take all these books and practices and reinventing organizations. Take all these things with a grain of salt because somebody's trying to sell you something. It's like the news. The news gets paid for by advertising. So you got to remember there's somebody advertising. They're not going to spit in the eye of their advertiser. But anyway, I'm going to end this.
But real quick. On that, so to yes and what you're saying, I would say that all that information is glorious. There's a wealth of it. How do you apply it? It's the same thing we teach our organizations, our people, right? Here's all the knowledge. Now I need you to apply it. And we need the organizations. And I think, you know, if we tie this in a bow, transformation, I feel like, does not hold space for here's the learning. Now, here's the organizational patience we need to create from a capacity perspective to apply that learning and allow those events to happen, right? Whether they're failures or not, and taking that information and using it going forward. So I appreciate all the knowledge that I gather from all these success stories or happy things, right? It keeps me engaged, but I also balance that with the difficulty it is to get to those places. Are we actually creating the ability for people to apply the knowledge that they're gaining? So I think,
yeah,
I'll stop there.
That's a great turn of phrase, organizational patience. We probably should unpack that in the future episode. So I'm going to ask one last question because we're quickly coming up on time. For listeners who may be debating going into this type of role, running a transformation, being put in charge of helping an organization deliver some kind of drastic organizational change that touches everything, what's the one piece of advice you would give? And I'm going to start with you, Merman.
I love how we started this podcast with why did we take these jobs? Hey, but if you're thinking about doing it, here's some advice.
Right. So, and you can't say don't take the job. That's not advice.
No, understand before you accept the job what your sphere is, where are you going to be put to be influential, how much of the org do you have, what's your slice of it, what's your success, just understand all that crap before you take the job. Because I was joking when I said I took this job because I wanted a VP, right? Is that title helpful for my resume? Sure, but don't take it because it's a title. Don't take it because you were promised a bunch of things. And then you're like, but they told me I was going to have this. Just know that your role is going to change as soon as you get in the door. And they're going to find something new they want to do. And they're going to use you in a different way. So just go because the company seems like it'd be fun to work with those people. And you'll figure out the rest from there. You'll hate your job 20 times a day and you'll love your job, you know,
just as many.
Maybe. Let's not go that far.
Lef, passing on a piece of advice. What would it be?
No one helps an elephant fall down. They just get out of the way. So what I mean by that is, you know, try and find the right in the conversations that are going on. Be a translator, ask good questions, powerful questions, come without judgment, and try and understand what keeps people up at night and try and help them or help organizations understand what's noise and what is actionable.
Okay, Janae? It'd
be better than what I said.
I would say, something kind of just to dovetail off of Lef, being able to go in and decide, like however you can, what's noise versus what's signal, you know? Mm-hmm. And have a good awareness of yourself, like what's important to you for that going in. You're working with people, change is hard. You're going to want to support them, and you might not get the big wins that you thought you were going to get, but the small wins are just as important.
Okay.
I love how she started with, you know, that dude that said the smart thing. I totally want to plus one that.
Merman, we need a Merman dump button. I guess I'm going to steal, you know, good artists create great artists steal. I'm going to steal from Dan Mezick, where he talks about be prepared or be surprised. And I think the whole crux of this episode, if we had to dilute it down into a couple sentences, it would be the arguments you think you're going to have are not the arguments you're going to have. You're going to have arguments you didn't plan on having. People will consistently surprise you. And if you give yourself a little grace, a little bit of patience, and go in with an open mind, you might be way more successful than you ever thought. And with that, I want to thank Andrew, I want to thank Merman, and I want to thank Janae for turning in and joining me on this conversation. I want to thank all of you for listeners for tuning in once again. We've got a Patreon, we've got a conversation on Discord, yada, 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 outro music, blah, blah, blah. So if you like what you heard, hop in the conversation, tune in next week. Until the next time, this is the Agile Uprising Podcast, signing out.